Hello and welcome again to the International Soccer Preview by Soccerphiles Canada. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor. And today we will be updating El Salvador in the final round of CONCACAF qualifying for World Cup 2022. So before this round, we did a team preview and a player preview for each team. We won't be repeating all that information here, but we do urge you to check out those podcasts at our website at soccerfiles.captivate.fm. So we'll summarize the information covered in each of those podcasts, and we gave a more detailed summary in our first podcast of this series, which was for Canada's team.
Right. So, in the briefer version here, we gave some information on the country, its location and population. This was in the team podcast. We gave a summary of their history in World Cup competition and in regional competition, with a particular look at their recent history. We took a brief look at their players, especially their goal scorers, and then we looked at their rankings and head-to-head record with the other teams in the group. And based on that, a discussion of their schedule and their prospects for this round of qualification.
Right, and for each of the player podcasts, we organized the team into positions and looked at the players who had been filling those positions in recent times. We gave some biographical information on them, specifically their history with the national team, and predicted who were the main candidates for each position. Again, in this podcast, we won't be repeating all of that. Rather, we will be looking back on how this round has gone for each team and how correct we were in our predictions of their performance and their players. Sometimes we were right, but sometimes players we expected to be used were not, and new players also came in.
Sorry, I was interrupted by that phone call from the manager of El Salvador, who says that David Ruggemas is still not back.
Good to get that
Anyway, so we're urging listeners to regard this podcast as a companion to the original two at the beginning of the qualification round. We won't be repeating biographical information for players that we discussed in the first podcast, but we will give that information for any new players.
And then finally, we will look here towards the future and discuss the prospects for El Salvador from this midpoint forward. But we'll begin with looking at where El Salvador are at after 8 of 14 games played.
All right, well, let us look. And they're looking pretty good at home and pretty poor on the road. Well, honestly, though, good at home in that they haven't lost, but ties at home just don't get the job done. And they've had three out of their five games were ties. So that's why they're near the bottom of the table. Just the one win against Panama.
Yeah, and then the loss at home as well against Mexico. So, yeah, I mean, their pattern is generally losing their away games and drawing at home, when if you really want to qualify, you have to draw on the road and win at home. So they're not doing that. But that said, this is their first appearance in the hex or the octagon as we have now since that was introduced. They're not really considered one of the top six teams in the region, I would argue. So where they're doing now, I think, is more or less where we expected them to be. Good enough to take a few points off teams, but really not good enough to be competitive and challenging for the intercontinental playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, that first result there, home tie against the USA, is a bit of a spoiler result, and I think that's kind of what El Salvador is, rather than being kind of competitive for the top half, more of a spoiler team for the top half teams, especially at home.
Yeah, and notably, their one win was at home against Panama. Had Panama won that game, they'd be sitting on top of the pile. As it was, it drops them down to fourth. So we did talk about that previously. They can play that spoiler role. They are good enough to take points, and we thought they would. So they have done that here. But as we said, with 6 points from 8 games, not really enough to launch a threat to actually qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, that's right. And they'll definitely be happy to be ahead of Honduras. And when we talk about their future prospects, I think staying ahead of Honduras will be one of their main goals. Let's take a look at their scorers and their red cards. So they have just 4 goals over their 8 games. Obviously, that's part of the problem for them. Jairo Henriquez has got two of those goals. He scored just 1 minute into their game against Costa Rica. And then Alexander Roldan got a goal in the 90th minute to earn a home draw against Jamaica.
Right. And then they've had two red cards as well. Mario Jacobo and Narciso Orellana. Those games were against Mexico and Costa Rica. So they've had to finish games with 10 men twice.
Yeah, sorry, I think that second one was actually against the USA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we maybe should verify that. But it doesn't matter that much. Let's move on to talk about their formations. And do you want to take us through that, Connor?
Sure, it's a little bit all over the place. In that they've tried various formations so far. The one consistent is four at the back. You know, that they've used that in all eight of their games. They've used varying formations, kind of a 4-1-2-1-2, a 4-3-1-2. A couple times they played with one game they played with one striker, another game they played with three forwards. If we had to pick a default, I guess it would be their a 4-1-3-2. Which they used for each of their last three games. But they have made a lot of changes throughout qualifying so far.
That's right. And truth be told, the websites kind of disagree, kind of all over the place on what the formation actually is, especially in the midfield. So it's with a bit of a grain of salt. But I agree that 4-1-3-2 is... you know, roughly being used in five games. So it seems to be their default lineup. All right, let's get into the players. And the manager remains Hugo Perez. Not much to say about that. How about you, Connor?
No, not really. He's managed a number of clubs before. But yeah, he's been the manager of El Salvador just since 2021, so just since this new round of qualifying.
Yeah, we talked about him in the initial podcast, and he actually played for the USA, but is actually a fairly big name in Costa Rica too, having coached the national team, and he coached a few I'm looking with it, club teams, but it wasn't really club teams. It was like the under 23 team and assistant coach for El Salvador. So in the management side, he's been with Costa Rica for quite a while. But
El Salvador, we should say.
Oh, I keep saying Costa Rica, don't I?
Yeah,
I have been corrected. Sorry, let's move on to goalkeepers. Do you want to lead that one?
Sure. So despite being fairly new to the team, playing his first game in June 2021, Mario Gonzalez started all eight games for the national team, started all games for the national team since that time, except for a couple of friendlies, and that includes all eight games here. Kevin Carabantes had been on the bench for all games, and Jonathan Guardado for five of the eight. For two games, there are only two keepers, but for game seven, Edgar Damian Alguera was on the bench. We had made mention of Henry Hernandez, their veteran keeper, who played in the 2003 Gold Cup and then captained the team in 2019. He was a starter right up until March 2021. He sat on the bench for one game after that and then hasn't appeared since, though he does still seem to be on the books, but not used so far.
Yeah, I mean, if he is used, he would probably be a sub rather than replacing Mario Gonzalez, but it's Gonzalez all the way here. All right, let's move on to the defense, and specifically the central defense. And the combination of Eric Zavaleta and Ronald Gomez Rodriguez was expected, despite them both earning their first cap in June 2021. The pairing was used for the first three games. It kept goalless draws in their first two home games, but then suffered a 0-3 loss in Canada. Whether because of that or because the two were unavailable, they were not called up for the next three games, and the pairing was changed to Roberto Dominguez and Eduardo Vigil. Domingos had been with the team since 2015, but Vigil was brand new, playing his second cap. That pairing lasted two games. Vigil was then matched with Mario Jacobo, who got a red card in his first cap and promptly disappeared from the squad. The manager then went back to the original pairing of Eric Zavaleta and Ronald Gomez for the last two games.
The fullback positions are a little bit more straightforward. Alexander Lahren was the default left back, but was replaced by Alex Roldan for games 4 and 5. Roldan is listed as a right back, but played as a left back in the Gold Cup, and all other games actually as a left or right midfielder here. Juan Barahona returned from a 2-year absence to make the bench for the first two games, but then dropped off the squad.
All right, so it looks like Alexander Lahren. There, he was pretty rough in the game against Canada. Do you remember that, Connor?
I do. I think he got in a couple of dust-ups with Tejon Buchanan in particular, but stayed on the field, perhaps a bit fortuitously.
Yeah, well, definitely. As Canada fans, we felt he should have gotten a red card for one of those tackles. And I think he was actually subbed out fairly early in that game, maybe at halftime.
Yeah, on a yellow.
Yeah. Okay, well, right back is very straightforward. It's Brian Tamakas all the way. He played all 8 games. He currently seems the only candidate apart from Alex Roldan, who, as we mentioned above, plays anywhere but right back, despite the fact that he's designated as one.
And that may just be down to the manager finding a way to include both players in his team.
Good point.
I'll talk about the midfield now. So we quoted Darwin Serhant as a versatile midfielder, even though he is listed as a defensive midfielder. That's kind of our own creation for a player who is all over the field. And he really lived up to that here, playing as a right midfielder in 3 games, an attacking midfielder for 2, and a substitute in 3 others. If Darwin Serhant was hard to pin down, Marvin Monterosa was even tougher. Despite being coded as a defensive midfielder, he played as an attacking midfielder in games 1 and 2, subbed in for a defender in game 3, a left midfielder in game 4, and as a co-forward in games 5 and 6. So all over. He was a sub after that and then was not selected for game 8, so equally as mysterious.
Yeah, even on the bench he plays different roles. We're going to see those two names kind of pop up all over the place here. But we'll move on to defensive midfielders, and the main man there has been Narciso Orellana. We coded Orellana as a central midfielder in the initial podcast, but he was definitely a more defensive midfielder here. There's not a lot of difference, but he was a central midfielder when they played a 4-3-3. But as we saw, they more often played a 4-1-2-3 or some slight variation on that. And he tended to be the one kind of just ahead of the defense and between the three midfielders. Regardless, he was a fixture there for the first 4 games. He was a halftime substitute in the 5th, but got a red card after that and was not on the team, not selected for the team. So is that 5th game against Costa Rica or the USA? We had a bit of confusion there.
I can confirm it was Costa Rica.
Oh, well done. You were right. From game 5, Christian Martinez took over the role of central defensive midfielder from Orellana. Of course, he would have been suspended. Though 27 years old, it was Martinez's first cap for the national team, and he started in the role in 3 of the last 4 games. Interestingly, he was born in Costa Rica. I actually thought he was born in Liberia. But Liberia is a town in Costa Rica, and that's where he was born. For game 6, the role was filled by Isaac Portillo in his only appearance, and Melvin Cartagena had a minimal role. He subbed into game 1 and was on the bench for 4 other games, but not selected for 3.
On the left midfield, Alex Roldan, though listed as a right back, is fairly firmly established in this position. He played five of the games there and then played as a right back in games 4 and 5. In game 6, he actually switched flanks with right midfielder Enrico Hernandez. When he was not there, in left midfield, that is, various out-of-position players filled the role rather than the many players coded as left midfielders. The roving Marvin Monterosa, who we met above as a versatile midfielder, he was there in game 4. Right midfielders Jairo Enriquez and, as we have seen, Enrico Hernandez were there in games 5 and 6 respectively, but we'll cover them in the next section. Absent is Juan Carlos Portillo, who, despite appearing in all Gold Cup 2021 games, was not called up here. Nor was Jaime Alas, now 32, though he does seem to be on the books with El Salvador still. Andreas Flores was not called up either, having last played in March 2021. Dennis Pineda subbed in twice and was on the bench for 3 games besides that. Joaquin Rivas is also listed as a left midfielder or winger, but he played only as a forward, and we'll talk more about him soon.
All right, so a lot of names to juggle around there, but Alex Roldan seems to be the main player filling that position. And sorry, that was actually left midfielders that you were talking about, but on the graphic for our YouTube watchers, I had it under right midfielders. So now we will move on to the right midfield position. And we saw above that roving midfielder Darwin Serene filled that role for games 1, 2, and 4. Otherwise, in games 3 and 5, it was Enrico Hernandez, though he proved to be a roving midfielder too. He played as a left forward in a 3-man attacking line in game 3 and in left midfield for game 6, where we saw that he switched flanks with Alex Roldan. He seemed to settle into a central attacking midfield role for the last 2 games. Enrico Hernandez was new to the squad, earning his first 2 caps as a substitute in the first 2 games and was a starter for all the others. So maybe we should take a closer look at him, Connor.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, he was been with the team since just this year, 2021. He was born in 2001, so he's fairly young. And he plays with Vitesse in the Netherlands, so one of a few overseas players. And he was actually loaned to PSV in the Netherlands since this year. So some pretty big clubs there in Europe.
Yeah, sorry, I reviewed that, and it wasn't PSV Eindhoven, but the much smaller FC Eindhoven.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but sorry, I had it wrong there. Anyway, moving on. For game 7 and 8, Brian Landaverde was called to the squad, actually recalled to the squad, after a 6.5-year absence. Listed as a defensive midfielder, he played right midfield, but he was subbed out of game 8 at half time. So not sure if he'll be in the equation going forward. Jairo Enriquez is listed as a right midfielder, but only played 1 game in the midfield, and that was on the left for game 5. For the 5 other games, he played as a forward in a 2 and sometimes 3-man attack.
So we'll talk a little bit more about players who aren't left and right wingers. Game 3 against Canada saw an odd overhaul of the offense, featuring the 3 players that we'll talk about in their only start. Though all wingers, Armando Moreno and Josh Perez, were positioned as attacking midfielders with Valmer Martinez as the lone forward. Down 2-0 at halftime, the manager promptly abandoned the plan and subbed in the usual forwards. All were active substitutes otherwise, playing almost every game, except Moreno and Perez were not called up for the last 2 games. So we've seen that with a couple teams that we've talked about so far, where there's kind of been complete overhauls for a game and then they reverted back, and El Salvador falls in that camp too.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I'm right on this, but a lot of times those overhauls seem to involve Canada, whether they're actually playing Canada that game or coming off a game against Canada. I find it a bit of an odd pattern.
Yeah, and none of the teams we've where they've done that have were playing Canada in the freezing cold like Costa Rica and Mexico were. So not really much of a, protecting people from the weather, which, could be a legitimate reason to draft some new players in.
Yeah, and maybe it was because I think Celso Borges of Costa Rica didn't play the Canada game, which we found odd, but could have been because of the cold. But there were some changes by Costa Rica and Mexico, even for those games. But yeah, much bigger changes here. Let's move on to the forwards, and we put attacking midfielders in this category. So the role of attacking midfielder and even forwards has been covered by the players listed so far. In other words, it's out of position players filling this role. But we'll just recap quickly here. In all cases, attacking midfielders supported a two-man offense. Marvin Monterosa, our roving midfielder and normally a defensive midfielder, played attacking midfielder in games one and two. Game three had two midfielders, Armando Moreno and Joshua Perez. In the odd experiment that we just described. And game four was a 4-3-3 formation with no attacking midfielder. Darwin Serin, who we have designated as a versatile or roving midfielder, had the position here of attacking midfielder in games five and six. And game seven and eight featured Enrico Hernandez, designated a right midfielder, but in this attacking midfielder role in the center. And that leaves us just with forwards to consider.
Yeah, the role of forward was played by players coded midfielders throughout. That will be recap, but first a word on players designated as forwards. So having scored 8 goals in the previous rounds of World Cup qualifying, David Rugamas was considered a big miss in the 2021 Gold Cup when, after appearing on the bench in game one, he was ruled out with a severe flu. However, he did not return for any of these 8 games, and our efforts to find out why or what has become of him have failed. But a huge loss, obviously, with that sort of goal production. There are a few other candidates as well. Marvin Marquez had a small role in the Gold Cup where he earned his first cap, but he is also not being called up. A familiar name, Nelson Banila, last played in June 2021, and Rodolfo Zelaya has been off the team since 2019. It is no wonder they're using midfielders, but 4 goals in their 8 games suggests the need for a finisher. So, perhaps strange that they haven't relied on some of these players. As it is, Joaquin Rivas and Jairo Enriquez made up a two-man front line in games one and two, and after some experimentation, did so again in games seven and eight. Game three featured the failed experiment with Volmer Martinez as the lone striker. Game four returned to Joaquin Rivas and Jairo Enriquez, adding a third striker, Enrico Hernandez, to the mix. Games five and six had Monterosa and Rivas paired with the return to the original combination after that. The main forward, Joaquin Rivas, also replaced Rugamas in the Gold Cup. And he started up top in all games here, except for the game three experiment, where he resumed his position after halftime. Going forward, though, they seem to need a better solution as Rivas has not scored a goal in qualification, despite scoring three with a disallowed goal as well over their 4 games in the Gold Cup. So his goal threat has unfortunately dried up.
Yeah, he was quite impressive in the Gold Cup, especially against Qatar, but isn't really doing the job here, filling the boots of David Rugamas, and that's a real mystery. I mean, he had the flu, so that's not something you would expect to carry into this qualification, but to be missing for all 8 games, kind of gone AWOL from our perspective. We both tried to find out what had become of him, but both came up dry. Okay, sorry, we're going to take a quick look at some other things, and one of them is the we often do key substitutes here, but we basically the players we mentioned, when they're not playing or when they're not starting, they become the substitute. So we're going to move on to new players and just a review of some of the players we've talked about. Do you want to take that, Connor?
I'll actually let you take that if that's all right.
Okay, I'll just put up the names and then we'll go through them. Jonathan Guardado has made the preliminary squad for the 2021 Gold Cup, and now he seems to have moved into the third keeper position. We talked about Eduardo Vigil, who had earned his first cap in August, and though he wasn't called up for the first two games and then was an unused substitute in game three, he started three games in a row after that. He went back to the bench after that, but subbed into the last game for Eric Zavaleta just 38 minutes in. So a bit of worry that Zavaleta might be injured going forward there. Christian Martinez started as a central midfielder in three of the last four games. His first cap was in game five against his mother country, Costa Rica, but he had been subbed out at half time there. He was subbed out in game seven and eight also, but he lasted a bit longer. And finally, Enrico Hernandez earned his first two caps as a sub in games one and two, and then went on to start all six games after that, though in various positions. So those are the new players coming in. And how about the notably absent, Connor?
I'll let you take that as well, and then I can talk about the default lineup.
Okay, you're keeping me busy here. Okay, well, we've just mentioned these names in passing. Henry Hernandez, the goalkeeper, kind of the steady goalkeeper before before Gonzalez, has been missing. Not sure whether he is going to come back, but if he does, it would probably be as a backup keeper. Jaime Alas is a big name for the team, but he hasn't appeared for quite a while now, so it looks like he might be off the squad. And of course, we made quite a bit of mention of David Rugamas, who has gone AWOL for the team, at least from our perspective. All right, Connor.
All right.
Now it's your turn.
Thanks, Kevin. I didn't have all my notes in front of me there.
Okay.
But I do for the default lineup. So Hugo Perez is the manager, and then Mario Gonzalez is kind of firmly entrenched as a goalkeeper. Despite some changes, the main pairing in central defense remains Eric Zavaleta and Ronald Gomez Rodriguez. Left back is Alexander Lahren, though Alex Roldan has filled in the role as well. And right back is Brian Tomakis, who, as we said, started all eight games. In midfield, we have Darwin Serén and Marvin Monterosa. As kind of versatile midfielders, they've popped up all over the place. In the defensive midfield position, we have Narciso Orellana, as well as Christian Martinez. And then for the kind of left and right midfield, there's some names we've mentioned, Alex Roldan and Darwin Serén, the two that typically fill those spots. Attacking midfielders has been filled by various players. And then up front, Joaquin Rivas is the most established forward, though, as we said, yet to score a goal for them.
Right. So, yeah, a lot of movement around the field. So we're kind of summarizing there, and probably get a couple of emails from El Salvadorian saying how desperately wrong I was all the way through. But let's take a look at the team again, and especially the upcoming fixtures. And El Salvador actually has four away games out of six. and just at home playing Canada and Costa Rica.
Yeah, a bit daunting given that they haven't picked up a point yet from three road games so far, so that they have four or six road games remaining. You know, that makes it challenging. That something will have to change there, you know, for them to pick up points. They start with an away game in the U.S. and end with an away game in Mexico. So two really, really difficult games that bookend their remaining six fixtures.
Yeah, and they also play the other top three team, Canada, although that one is at home. Honduras and El Salvador is a bit of a grudge match too, and Honduras will definitely be looking to get off the bottom of the table using that match. That doesn't leave them with a lot of points. Even playing in Jamaica is a bit daunting. Do you see them getting any points here, Connor?
I think some points are possible. I mean, the away match in Honduras is possible, and then you know, possibly at home to Costa Rica, you know, who've been a bit underperforming themselves. I don't really see them taking a point from their home game against Canada, but you know, they're here kind of to play spoiler, so you know, it's possible, but I don't see a lot of points. They have the one win so far. I don't really see them adding to that. You know, I think the Honduras game is a big one for them to try and maintain second bottom. But I think we knew coming in that, you know, they're not really in the top six teams in the region, certainly not competing for top four. Would you consider second bottom an achievement, or is that really nothing to celebrate?
Well, I think it is something to celebrate, given that it's over local rivals Honduras, the football war and all of that. I don't know if that's actually still on the minds of El Salvadorians, but it's kind of a famous story that a soccer game between El Salvador and Honduras triggered a war, although the reasons were a lot more complex than that. Yeah, and I think just to go back to that home game against Canada, definitely they could get a draw there. But I think one of the reasons you're saying that that's a tough game is not just because we're Canada fans, but because that's been their heaviest loss so far. I mean, they tied their first two games of the qualification 0-0, so they were probably relying on a good defense, and then Canada came out and beat them 3-0. So I think that'll be a bit of a psychological obstacle for them, to be honest.
Yeah, they have been pretty stingy at home, just conceding 3 goals in their 5 games, and 2 of those against Mexico. But you think to get a point, they probably have to be keeping clean sheets, because they've only scored 4 goals from 8 games. They're the lowest goal scorer so far, and you know, without Rugamas, they really don't have a top recognized striker. So that makes it difficult. I think they need to be defensively very solid to get some points. I don't see them, you know, I don't see their goal scoring record changing dramatically. But you know, for them, it'll be a good experience playing all these teams. You know, they've picked up points so far. I expect, like we said, a few more, but you know, I wouldn't really say they've underperformed or overperformed. They kind of done really as well as we thought they might.
Yeah, as you say, it's good experience for them. They didn't get to the hex very often. And now that it's expanded to 8 teams, they were, you know, they're definitely one of the teams that that are in the top 8. As you say, or as we've been saying kind of all along, a bit more of a spoiler role than actual candidate to finish in the top half. And they probably knew that from the beginning. But definitely, I think they would like to see their offense improve. Of course, we talked about that with Honduras. But in the case of El Salvador, apart from David Rugamas, they really don't have anyone to rely on. And with Honduras, it was kind of injuries to forwards that was the problem. But for El Salvador, it's, the missing David Rugamas, but honestly, a kind of a lack of scoring potential there four goals over their eight games is something that they'll be anxious to improve. But honestly, Connor, I've been listening to you hesitate and hum and haw about it, so give it to me straight. Is El Salvador going to finish at the bottom here?
I fear they might, and I'm going to say, in fact, they will. The key game is that road game against Honduras, where Honduras could, you know, depending on other results, could overtake them or at least go level on point as it is. So that's the key game. They'll be motivated not to lose it, but you know, with 4 to 6 on the road, couple, you know, a lot of tough games. They play really all the, you know, the top three still. I think it's going to be very difficult for them. You know, I don't see them picking up that many points, maybe just one or two more. So I do think they'll finish at the bottom.
Yeah, and I got to say, I agree with you there. I think Honduras will be anxious to overcome them and not finish at the bottom because that's, you know, not a position that Honduras would have expected and would be used to, whereas El Salvador, I think, did well to make it to this round. And, yeah, I don't think they really have the power to compete at this level with the players they have right now. So great talking to you about that. And do you want to take us out?
Yeah, so just a reminder before we leave that you can find this and all our earlier podcasts at soccerfiles.captivate.fm. That's soccerfiles with a PH. You can also search Soccer Files Canada and find us that way as well.
Right, and this is our last podcast in the series on the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying update. We're now going to turn our attention to the African Cup in early January, and you can look forward to a series of podcasts about the African Cup groups.
Yeah. Well, North America and CONCACAF has been fascinating so far. It's still tight at the bottom. It's tight at the top and tight at the bottom. So it'll be interesting to see these last six match days play out.
You bet. Great doing this series with you, Connor. And thanks so much for your wisdom and help.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.